This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Failure is just a part of life, an experience to learn from, as we're told constantly by everyone from school teachers to management consultants. We have our disappointments and embarrassments, and most of us try to learn from them and put them behind us somehow. But some of us make podcasts out of them. And failure, one particular failure, is what Connor Ratliff's Dead Eyes is all about. Staff writer Sarah Larson writes about podcasts for The New Yorker, and she spoke with Connor Ratliff last week.
Connor Ratliff is a brilliant and funny comedic performer and actor who's beloved in the improv world and among his fellow performers. Like, a lot of the funniest people we've enjoyed on TV and in movies in the last few years think Connor's one of the funniest people they know. So if he's so great and beloved, why doesn't everybody know who he is?
There was one point I was approached by an agent or a manager, I don't even remember which they were. He said, "What's your story? Why? How come you don't have representation?" And I said, "Well, because I have no interest in working in show business. I don't like it."
What could make someone who loves performing and who's so good at it stop performing? It all begins with Tom Hanks.
I'm a huge Tom Hanks fan and always have been. I was the kid in high school that when people would talk about, you know, this Tom Hanks movie or that Tom Hanks movie, I'd be like, "But do you remember his episodes on Family Ties? Like, those are really good."
So you can imagine how excited Connor was when, not long after he got out of acting school, he was cast in a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers, created by Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks.
And then the news got even better because I found out that Tom Hanks is going to be directing episode 5, which is the episode that I was supposed to be in. So it just kept getting better and better. I was thinking, this is such a great start. Things are going to start working out for me now because I'm in this Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks, HBO prestige production. And then the day before I was supposed to film my scene, I had already had my haircut, my costume fitting. Everything was ready to go. I get a frantic call from someone in my agent's office, and they deliver me this message. Tom Hanks has looked at your audition tape, and he's having second thoughts. He thinks you have dead eyes. And so I got on a train, and the whole time thinking, what do I do? How do I'm going to have to re-audition in person for Tom Hanks. And knowing that he thinks I have dead eyes. And there's very little I can do about it. I get to Hatfield Air Base, I wait, I hear Tom Hanks arrive, and I read the scene for him, and then it was over. And he was very nice, but then a few minutes later, they said, "We've decided to go another way."
It's one thing to get fired. Lots of people get fired. We've all had our disappointments. It's another thing to get fired by the Oscar-winning American treasure, Tom Hanks. And to hear that he thinks you have dead eyes, what does that even mean? It sounds terrible. It's like hearing you have a dead soul. Connor did not take it well. I wouldn't have either. He started to doubt whether he had what it took to make it as an actor.
And you're sort of like, this is this is not what I want my life to be.
So Connor's doing great now, but his path to where he is was circuitous. It involved quitting acting, 10 years working at Barnes & Noble in Union Square, doing improv at UCB, the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, and playing a dollar bill in a White Castle commercial.
Today I stand in this $3 bill for value, for variety, for freedom. Introducing White Castle's $3 freedom to choose, five sliders to choose.
Throughout it all, he was still haunted by the fact that Tom Hanks had fired him for having dead eyes. So he did what any comedian would do. He started a podcast.
This is Dead Eyes, a podcast about one actor's quest to find out why Tom Hanks fired him from a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
So what was the pitch that you were giving to podcast companies at the time?
I mean, the pitch was like, we'll treat it like a true crime podcast. We'll act like, we'll just take it really seriously. And comedically, it will be the most narcissistic podcast in the world. You know, an actor trying to find out, like, why did this thing happen to me? But we'll use that as a way of, like, pivoting to other people's stories. So we use sort of, like, comedic narcissism, but then genuine, like, empathy. And I could also talk to anybody famous that I knew who might be interesting, because I knew I would get to their stories of failure and disappointment.
You're kind of like, am I doing anything right? I'm 48 years old. Like, I've been doing this more than I haven't in my life at this point. But when you're younger and something like this happens, I had it happen to me 15 times with pilots, to the point where Les Moonves at CBS had told my agents to stop sending me in because, and I quote, "John Hamm will never be a television star."
Wow. What did you feel like when you heard that?
Not great. And then you start to, what did I do in the room?
Like, I mean, one of the great strengths of the show, I think, is obviously the breadth and depth of people you talk to and hearing the stories of all these little moments of triumph and failure in various people's careers and things they tried to do that didn't work out or a dream they had that didn't come to pass. And it humanizes everyone. And it reminds you that there are all these stories behind, you know, the TV and movies that you love that are just stories of creative misfires and, you know, all the things that we all go through that we just don't hear about. How did you know about your potential guests' professional disappointments that they may have had? Did you just assume everyone had them?
I assume that everyone had them. We've all heard people complaining about how things didn't go their way. And I think the fact that my approach to it is not that I'm saying it's no big deal, but I am saying, like, it's funny and we should put it in perspective.
Yeah.
It's a universal enough thing. The number of emails that I've gotten from people who have no connection to show business who are like, this is just like what it's like to work in, you know, my office. Like, I'm not being listened to, or they're making a decision that makes no sense, you know?
Yeah.
Or this thing happened and it's bad for me, but it's good for the store or something, you know?
Well, everybody has vulnerability and everybody has professional, you know, things that you hope for, try for, are disappointed by, aren't good at, you know, all that stuff. And I think that for non-actors like me and many other listeners, the idea of your body coming into it in such a direct way, what you happen to look like, you know, what you do with what you happen to look like, that being part of whether you get work or not and the kind of work you get is just horrifying.
Yeah.
So it's heightened, I think, for a lot of listeners. And maybe we feel some relief and satisfaction that we are not on TV or trying to be an actor. You know, there's something that...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I just remembered this moment from the Freaks and Geeks Guys episode where Judd Apatow is telling that story about auditioning for Jim Henson.
I auditioned and I got a call where they said, Jim Henson doesn't want you, but he would like to buy your ideas. Jim Henson said that he thought you lacked warmth. And it knocked me out to this day.
the most devastating thing you can imagine. And also, he doesn't lack warmth. I mean, we all know this. Anyone who's ever seen Judd Apatow knows that that's what's great about his work is his warmth and his generosity.
Yeah,
but to hear that as a young, struggling...
If Jim Henson had lived to the year 2015, he would have had an experience with Judd Apatow. They probably would have worked together. Judd Apatow probably would have produced a Muppet movie, you know? Like, they would have been able to hash it out. But because it happened and then Jim Henson is tragically taken from us, he never gets anything close to closure. He just has to live with that note, you know?
So I assume that kind of closure was what you were hoping to get from Tom Hanks.
I mean, there were a lot of things. I think, of course, the premise sounds like the most entitled thing in the world. It's just like... This, I was wronged and I must have a personal public sit down, which I think anyone who's listened to even one episode of it knows that, like, I never felt like, well, I deserve and am and therefore entitled to a sit down with Tom Hanks.
Right. Yeah.
One of the goals of the podcast, it wasn't just I wanted to harangue him into being on it. I wanted to make a podcast that was good enough that it would make sense.
Right.
That he might want to come on it.
Yeah.
And that he might have a good time being on it.
So from the very first episode of Dead Eyes, Connor's been hoping to get Tom Hanks on the show.
We got to get Hanks on this. I cannot wait. I cannot wait for you guys to bury the hatchet and become old friends.
What I would like to do ideally is to get a chance to re-audition for him, uh-huh. Or even just have him look at my reel. Maybe that'd be that would be less nerve-wracking for me if I could just show him my reel and be like, "Look, this is."
You think these are Dead Eyes, buddy?
A handful of shows, you know.
Getting Tom Hanks's attention is not as easy as you might imagine.
I sent a typewritten letter to his production offices.
Because he's a huge fan of old typewriters, and he has a huge collection, yeah.
He loves typewriters. I don't know this for certain, but I'm pretty sure Colin vouched for it as, like, this is a good podcast.
Yeah. So you have friends in common with Colin Hanks. And
Yeah. He's done a lot of, you know, comedy podcasts with people that I'm friends with, and so...
It seemed like the path was two of his, of Tom Hanks's kids, Colin and...
Elizabeth. Yeah.
Listened to learned of your podcast, listened to it on their own and liked it.
Yeah.
And told him about it. And he was initially skeptical. They're like, no, it's good. And then.
Yeah. So I got this email. This is what the email said. Connor, not sure how to volunteer my services to you, but joining you on your podcast would be a pleasure. Tom. And then below that, it says T. Hanks. So, and I'm like, is this the email or is this someone pranking me? Like, it was really hard to know. So we verified it. And so then I emailed Tom back the next morning and then we're just emailing back and forth, figuring out like, when do we want to, I was like, would you be comfortable meeting in person?
So you should listen to the whole episode. It's beautiful. And I won't spoil it for you, but suffice to say, the Dead Eyes incident was not as memorable to Tom as it was to Connor.
Does any of this ring a bell?
Not a single moment of this rings a bell.
Two moments in that episode that really stick out. One is when I talk about him being a two-time Academy Award winner, and he says, well... Those days were long over by the time...
That was crazy. Yeah. But he's talking about the 80s.
But just the idea that by that point, he was no longer... Yeah, he was no longer winning Oscars every year.
Right.
And that it was a slight source of even whimsical insecurity was very interesting. Because I'm like, oh, everybody has that feeling of like, well, have I peaked? Or is there something different? Or are people not, you know...
Yeah.
The other moment that... I didn't even notice until we were listening to the tapes and editing through them, and it was pointed out the moment where I talk about how excited I was that I was going to be directed by one of my favorite actors, and then Tom Hanks' response is he goes, "Bang!" He makes the noise, the boing noise. He goes, boing. I asked them, I said, can you isolate that sound and send it to me? Hold on. I have it here. Hold on. I'm going to play it. This is like, if I take nothing else from this experience, I take this noise.
Boing.
It is, that is so funny to me.
Boing.
I'll spend the rest of my life unpacking that boing.
Season 4, the boing. What did it mean? So this leads me to another question, the obvious question, which is this the end? You know, are you thinking about a fourth season or?
Well, for people who are thinking this is the perfect ending, it is an ending. And for anyone who wants it to be like the forever end and I disappear forever, you can just not pay attention if I ever do anything else. Like it's certainly the end of it as an investigative pot. Like the My Band of Brothers story doesn't have any, like I don't have any other investigating to do. But I think there will be other versions of this that will have more freedom to do the thing that always felt a little bit like we were cheating or being tricky when we'd be like, this episode's going to be about this other thing. Because a lot of people are like, I'm so sad that it's over. And we haven't announced that it's over. Yeah. Like it's like the number of people who have announced that the podcast is over without me saying that it's over has been very funny to me.
Everyone's firing you now.
Connor Ratliff's podcast Dead Eyes just wrapped up its third season, and you can read more from Sarah Larson at newyorker.com.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.